Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Happy Syracuse basketball's undefeated week, everyone.
Yeah, at least one team.
That's definitely the headliner. We have nothing else to talk about, just that.
not a thing. We'll get into Syracuse football first, just to get that out of the way, just rip the Band-Aid right off. I'm not going to say this wasn't something I could have seen coming, because it definitely was. To go 4-3, like grab that win over Clemson and then proceed to like F everything up from there. That said, like the way we lost to Wake Forest didn't make any sense to me based on what we saw all year to this point. And I know, Dan, you agree, and a lot of other people. I think the anger coming out of that game is mostly based on the fact that like nobody saw that coming if we were going to lose that game.
Yeah, it was what were we up, 17?
Yeah.
In the late second quarter. Blowing a lead like that is brutal, and I don't think we didn't really have a lead. Middleton to see we were playing from like behind or even with them the whole game, so it wasn't like, obviously we did a nice job of coming back early in the game against Wake Forest, but then to blow a big three-score lead like that in just incredibly quick amount of time between like the final drive of the second quarter and then...
How many times have we had a 17-point lead in the last... 3 years?
I don't think... I mean, we've been playing close games all year, right. So aside from like the blowout wins over the lesser teams, like that was... we were in a rare position being up that much, and then to blow it all on just...
In minutes.
I mean, I think they ended up taking the lead. I can look it up. I have the pot store open, but I'm too lazy.
Fourth quarter...
it was like the early fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So... like, it was maybe, I mean, I think it was on three straight drives they scored. I don't know if do we even get any stops in the second half?
No. They scored on every possession in the second half.
I thought so. I mean, that's just bad. It's really bad. It was the worst defensive performance we've had this year, by far. You can't really excuse, like, there weren't any huge injuries that we didn't already have. The offense, like, when your offense spots you 43 points at home, you should be able to win that game. Especially, you know, Wake's a really good team. Like, this is the best Wake Forest team since they went to the Orange Bowl. This team might actually be better than that one, I would say.
I'd say they're close. I think that one was still a little bit better because I think the defense is better. I think the skill players were better and more experienced. And I think the coaching full staff might have been better, even if the head coach, I think, is better now. Nonetheless, that's probably just nitpicking. This is a very talented and very competent Wake team, but... I still think they're a peer program of ours, and I don't think you should get blown out. I'm going to say 14 because that last one was a garbage time touchdown, but you shouldn't lose by a couple scores to a peer program at home, especially when your backup quarterback shows up and actually like plays pretty well. I know that there was a lot of like kind of heat coming towards Mahoney afterward, and I kind of tried to dispel that in an article earlier this week, but like, no, he wasn't perfect, but you cannot claim in any way, shape, or form that like Mahoney didn't do everything he possibly could, really, to win us this game or come close. Like he has a weird career and a weird legacy, and I completely understand all that. Like that's kind of this adds to that story at this point. Like the fact that he had, you know, the 11th most passing yards in a single game in school history. The fact that he's gonna probably graduate. I mean, assuming he plays the next two games, and I'd say there's a fair bet he does. He's probably gonna finish top 12 to 13 in passing yards. Like all that's insane, but like it just goes to show how weird like the Mahoney experience has been for the last few years.
It's tough because Mahoney, like, if you told me that Zach Mahoney would play the game, score us 43, lead us to 43 points, and would throw for 380 yards and three touchdowns, I would say we probably won by two touchdowns at least. And like, honestly, I know the offense completely stalled out in the second half.
They really didn't have many possessions, though. Like
that's a problem. We gave up long drives. We had some weird play calling. The three and out, which I'm sure we'll talk about. Part of me, like, it was bad. The three deep balls to the end zone. It was bad. I think some people were under the impression that we drew. I haven't redone and rewatched it because I'm not you. I'm not a masochist. I think people were under the impression that we drew up like three Hail Marys, and that's just not the case. There were three good looks that Mahoney had. I think there was one really good look at the end. The third, the third, the third down throw, Mahoney just missed it, and Ishmael stumbled. That should have been a touchdown.
Yeah.
He had the dive beat by two or three steps.
The second down throw was shit. The first one was fine.
Yes. So all three, like, I think you can say, and I don't think you're completely wrong, like, situationally, even if you think you have that shot at the end zone, you can't make that throw three times in a row. I think maybe, like, even more analytically based people would probably tell me I'm wrong, and that, like, the best, like, win probability added on a throw would be to take that shot when you have your best receiver open or open-ish twice in one-on-one coverage.
Right.
So it looked really bad. It was really frustrating to watch, especially because, you know, we couldn't really see the rest of the field. We don't have, like, the all-22. Everyone else, we weren't running four seams to the end zone. So there were other guys probably in better positions to pick up first downs.
Well, Babers said that the underneath guys were covered, and yeah, like, I have to kind of trust him on that.
I don't know why he would, like, lie.
Yeah, yeah.
We could go look it up, and I don't know. I remember watching each play, and I'm like, I don't hate that throw in a vacuum. It's just tough to watch that throw.
Three straight times. That drive was
Mahoney
great.
Mahoney does not throw a great deep ball.
Yeah, the drive was great up until that point. Like, that's the thing. Like, Mahoney's very good at finding that guy in the 15 to 20-yard range who's going to be able to make things happen after the catch.
Yeah.
Or hitting the wide-open guy, as we saw with Pierce twice.
Yes. And Mahoney made some great throws. I'm, like, endlessly impressed given, you know, he's a walk-on. We obviously
walk-on
probably never thought he
would play.
Yeah, he's turned from this, like, option quarterback into more of, like, a pocket passer than Dungy in some weird way. Obviously, they're very different players. Like, they can both run, but Dungy's a scrambler. And Mahoney, like, can run, like, the triple option that we saw from a couple years ago. And now Mahoney's, like, a pretty, like, I think if... Does he have another year of eligibility?
No, he's done.
He's done? Because I was wondering if, like, if... He played in three seasons, so I don't know.
He played in three seasons, but he transferred from DuPage.
Oh, you're right. I forgot he transferred. Does it, honestly, like, I wouldn't want to lose him, but I kind of wish he had another year of eligibility so he could go transfer to, like, a MAC school and see what he could do. Like, go transfer to Western Michigan and see if, like, Lester's running offense.
No, because then we'd have to face him next year.
Oh, right. Never mind. Don't do that. I mean, it can't happen because I forgot he played D2 or D3 before this. But, like, in a different world, it would have been really cool to see him, like, have his own team.
Yeah.
Because, man, that kid's a gamer. And, like, you can't really ask for that much more. Obviously, he didn't have a great second half. But, like you said, he didn't have that many opportunities. And that one drive was in a defined game where he put up big numbers. And, like, it wasn't even his biggest number game ever, which is crazy.
Like, the play calling, too, in that second half was just weird. Like, I brought this up in the offensive play calling breakdown on Tuesday. Like, we abandoned the run completely. Like, literally.
But it was
just
probably our best running game. Like, we averaged almost 6 yards a carry.
Yeah, like we were consistently picking up chunks of yardage on the ground. Like, I felt like we were up three. We were playing like we were behind. And, like, Mahoney, while he is a very, I think he's better than he should be, but he shouldn't be expected to be able to, like, drag Syracuse back into a game that, like, the defense just did not feel like keeping us in. At some point, like, I agree, he locked on to both those quarterbacks. Both of those passes. Both of those interceptions were awful, and, like, I rewatching them, it was even worse. Like, seeing just how telegraphed those throws were. But, like, should he have been put in that position to begin with? Like you said earlier, if you're going to be accountable, he was accountable for 41 points, and the 2 points were Scoop Bradshaw's on the blocked extra point. But nonetheless, like, if you're gonna be a quarterback on the field for 43 points, you should win 9.5 times out of 10.
Right. And it almost felt like, and I know it's tough to, like, adjust on the fly here, but I had to imagine that they had a good idea that Dungy wasn't going to play, given, like, I know he warmed up, but, like, they knew more than anyone else. It almost felt like in the third quarter we were running the offense as is best designed for Dungy, where, you know, Dungy's very much a make-a-play guy. Like, you have good receivers. He can go out there. He can improvise, find 15 yards on the ground, or hit a big play downfield. Mahoney is a good runner, but he's a good runner in a very different way. He excelled in that option system. He's really good at finding seams and using blockers. Dungy's really good at just kind of, like,
killed.
Getting killed, but he's just an improviser. Like, you're not drawing up runs for Dungy most of the time. They've done it a little bit. You're not running, like, a designed option scheme with Dungy like we did with Mahoney back under Lester. So it seemed like we were you know, running more of, like, a Dungy style set of play calls, where you're like, okay, you didn't have deep play, you didn't have guys going deep, like, on that one drive, and, you know, if stuff breaks down, Eric can go run for 18 yards, and he does that all the time, multiple times a game. He's our leading rusher, probably, I'd guess, not looking more than half our games this year. And I think he's still our leading rusher for the season.
Yeah.
Mahoney's just not, he doesn't have that skill set. He's an effective runner, but it's just not, he's not the same player.
Well, they don't give him the read option. They might give it to him like once or twice a game versus
and
Dungy.
It's not a staple of our offense, yeah. So I get that.
Yeah, like Dungy, I feel like, just gets the read option like every single time. Or at least he improvises into it. Like, and this is something we talked about on Twitter, like during the game and on Slack during the game, and then after I brought it up a little bit in the Mahoney piece. Like, Dan, do you honestly think, and like I really am curious, like, do you think that Mahoney might run this offense better, or at least is it a better facsimile of what Babers wants to do with Mahoney under center than it is what Dungy under center?
I think in the first half, and I saw you tweet this, and I think we talked about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. In the first half, I think you can make that argument because, I mean, things were going really well. But Mahoney's very effective at finding the underneath passers. I think he might actually be more accurate in short to intermediate throws than Dungy is.
Quick release, too. Like that was what sprung out to me, was that like Dungy actively avoids one of the key components of this offense, which is quick release.
Yeah, the thing is, when you get into high leverage situations, which we find ourselves in all the time, because we were in every game up until, I mean, even this game, we were in it late, and then Wake Forest just put the foot down in the fourth quarter. That's when Dungy's skill set becomes so invaluable. Right. And also, I think I tweeted this, it's kind of a shame. Mahoney got our best offensive line performance of the year by far. Mm-hmm. Like, that was, the offensive line played a great game. The running stats will show it. Mahoney did not face that much pressure at any point, I don't think. I think it probably dialed up a little bit with the fourth quarter. But
yeah, fourth quarter he was under pressure.
Because we had been on the run.
Yeah, we'd been on the run, but we also were sending four or five wide every single play. So, of course, you're going to send the house. Why wouldn't you?
Yes. And you know that Mahoney's not going to force the ball downfield effectively. And while, you know, Irvin and Steve are great receivers, like, they're not guys that are, they're not like a guy that's going to blow you off the line and beat you 40 yards downfield. Like, Ishmael just beats guys on one-on-one coverage. Ishmael and Phillips finds, like, the gaps in the zone and is really good he's become a better route runner. But they're not like your classic, like, flanker who's just going to burst off the line, beat a corner, and go downfield and catch
like
it.
These aren't the West Virginia teams of, like, you know, 2006 to, like, 2010, where you're going to have those types of guys, like your Tavon Austin types, who can just, like, absolutely kill you. Like, Irv's fast. Irv's probably still one of the fastest players on the team, but where you're right, like, he understands space really well, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be able to kill you off the line.
Yeah, Irv is, like, the classic, like, I'm going to make a rare cross-race comparison. He's, like, a classic, like, Patriots underneath wide receiver who just finds holes in the zone, makes plays, gets yards after the catch. Like, Irv's, like, more of, like, a Wes Welker or Julian Edelman than he is, like you said, a Tavon Austin or a guy who's going to burn someone off the line, like, one of those classic, like, Al Davis draft pick receivers. So we just don't have that guy. I think Devin Butler could be that guy at some point. Sean Riley could be that guy. They have that kind of speed. They just don't have – they're just not those players yet. They're not effective enough.
Right.
But we just, you know, inheriting the players that we have, like, Ishmael is an awesome one-on-one outside threat who will just – I mean, he murders cornerbacks. Like, there's no one who's effectively covered him this year. And Irv is great at what he does as well. It's just, you know – we don't have those kind of guys, and Mahoney isn't the type of quarterback that's going to fit those balls into tight coverage down the field like that. Dungy does it more effectively and has a little more touch on those deep throws where he connects with Ishmael a lot. So I think getting back to what we were talking about, in the first half, I think you saw a really well-designed, like, probably closest to what the Babers offense is supposed to look like, where it's very up-tempo, you have a lot of intermediate throws, you have effective running, and then because Wake just figured out that defensive switch that we made in the second quarter. I think they moved to, like, more of a cover one for some plays, and that threw Wake off, I believe, is what Wolford said. But then they figured it out, obviously, in the third quarter, and it was off to the races. We couldn't continue. I mean, I think we probably abandoned it too quickly because the game didn't really get out of hand until the mid-fourth quarter, but I think we got nervous, and we tried to get into a shootout when we were playing from ahead. And it just, none of it worked out well. So you can definitely put some blame on Babers for the game. I don't think the play calling was particularly good in the second half. And then the defense just I was hesitant to like get super critical because people are, I feel like people were like having memories of last year and superimposing them onto this year's defense.
Right.
Like, I know the defense has given up some points. It's so much better than it was last year, and it's been very good all year aside from like one or two spots. So I don't want to freak out about one really bad game. And it was really bad. We gave up 64 points to a solid, but not like uber explosive Wake Forest team. So that's awful. Like, there's no catching that. It's just like, we'll see what Louisville does. If Louisville does and drops 70 on us, then I'm like, okay, maybe this defense, maybe people are figuring this out. Now we have some work to do. If we go and give up, you know, 32 points to Louisville and it's a one possession game in either direction, I'm not going to be too crazy about it considering, you know, Lamar Jackson is a superhero and they're 13.5-point favorites. So we'll see. Let's see. Let's not all freak out at once about this defensive performance. It was really, really bad. You can be upset about it, but it doesn't mean that the defense has been like a sham this whole time, because the evidence is farther in the other direction that this defense is way improved, even with this one bad game.
Oh yeah. And that was the one thing, like, even though I was one of the more like boisterous people, like during and after the game, like being pretty pissed off about it, I did make sure to couch every single complaint, no matter how many, like, you know, profanities were included in such a tweet or a comment. Everything was couched with, this is one game, and if it continues, we're screwed. But if not, like, then we can still rebound from this. I think, you know, you and I were talking about it a little bit before the call. Like, Julian put together a really, really good defensive breakdown this week. Used some GIFs, really kind of isolated a couple plays that, you know, were just jokes. But didn't just say that the way I would there, but actually broke down, this is the coverage they were playing, this is whose assignment that was, this is what didn't happen, and that's why it, you know, fell apart. And I think for me, like, it was good to see that, you know, he put together a really nice breakdown of why both it could become the norm, especially against a really dynamic quarterback like Lamar Jackson, who I think if we can hold him under 40, I think is a success, versus why it might be a one-time thing if Syracuse can look at that tape the way he did, the way we are, and make those adjustments. I mean, you know, Dino Babers said today during the press conference, you know, Wolford's not Lamar, and he's right. So now it's okay. So you know that. The defense knows that. You, for some reason, and I'm not just going to put this on Babers, I think this is a staff-wide thing and players-wide too, like, you guys didn't really do anything differently in the second half when you already knew and you should have known going in that John Wolford was able to run the ball. I mean, he had 400 rushing yards going into the game. Now, since you know that Lamar can run much better than that, like, what are you going to do to contain him? And that's really going to decide the game, is you're not going to be able to stop him, but what can you do to contain him and limit, you know, Jackson's abilities? Are you going to make, like, if you want to make it into a one-dimensional offense, like, that's a strategy. I don't know if it's a winning one, but it is a strategy. I'm very curious to see, especially after Julian's piece that really kind of got into some nitty gritty details of the defense. I'm very, very curious to see kind of how this team comes out on Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting dilemma. I will say this Louisville team, it's probably more beatable than this Wake Forest team. Obviously, it's on the road, which is a problem. But Lamar is great. Lamar is putting up numbers that are very similar to what he was doing last year. He should definitely get another Heisman invite. It seems like Baker Mayfield's going to win that award, which I'm fine with. But he should be there again. He's having a great season with very little help, because most of the skill position talent is gone. The defense is an absolute train wreck, and he's still chugging along. So beating Lamar is going to be tough. I will say he does not have the surrounding talent that he's had the last couple of years. The receiving core is not as good. So I'm interested to see. I think trying to contain him and keep him in the pocket and forcing him to throw is still the optimal way to beat him. Now, just because Louisville's receivers haven't been like great this year doesn't mean that they can't do some damage against this secondary, which is, you know, is improved but still not great. But I want no. I mean, considering what Wolford did, who is not the runner that Lamar Jackson is by any stretch. He ran for 136 and 3 touchdowns. Like, I think we need to do everything we can to keep him in the pocket. And unfortunately with Lamar, he's, you know, one of the fastest players in college football. You're not going to be able to just like stick like a linebacker spy on him and just hope that's going to work. Cause we saw Wolford run right by Zaire Franklin a couple times. Lamar Jackson will be 20 yards upfield if we have the same kind of reaction time. So, if anyone had like the guide to start stopping Lamar Jackson, I mean, maybe Houston from last year does, but that was more on the offensive line getting eaten.
Well, yeah, if you have Ed Oliver, you're automatically going
to
be...
Yeah, if we knew get Ed Oliver and have him be healthy, that'd be fine. That'd be a good strategy. Our defensive line's solid. I think they can do some damage here, and maybe disrupting the play, you know, early on in the play is a good strategy, but you can't just, like, count on your defensive line having the same performance that, like, some of the best players in the country have had against that Louisville offensive line. So it's going to be tough. I don't think, you know... It's easy to just, like, count us out. I wouldn't do that yet because Louisville's not a great team by any stretch. But it'll also be interesting to see how this team responds. They responded pretty well after the Middle Tennessee game. All things considered, this is probably an even more devastating punch, not because of the opponent, because Wake Forest is a much better team, but because of how they gave up the game. So I'm really interested to see what the reaction from this team is, because it's probably the first spot like this that we've had under Babers.
Yeah, I mean, luckily against Pitt, you know, we had like the entire offseason to really digest that, and I don't really think that Pitt game had anything to do with this offseason's defensive improvement. I mean, maybe it did. It definitely didn't have anything to do with the Central Connecticut game. Felt like in general, like, that game was just kind of, you know, said, like, this is the mark, never hit it again. And, like, I think Babers has already, like, been up at night every night probably since Saturday, visualizing, like, just how much this team broke down. Some things that, like, you know, Babers is not one to really discuss scheme or strategy until it's already over. Dan, you think we maybe see a little bit of nickel out of this defense? Maybe we see, like, some Keelan Whitner, you know, moving up into one of the linebacker spots, maybe taking Jonathan Thomas's spot. I just feel like we might need a little more speed, even if we're not using it to cover receivers, but rather we're using it to maybe, you know, force Jackson to throw. And I know that that's a tough call for, you know, a Syracuse team that just simply does not, you know, have the ability to really keep people in check in the secondary, at least for an extended period.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, we've seen Whitner kind of do that type of thing at the, you know, at the linebacker level a couple times this year. I'm interested to see. I think you can't throw out, like, we've seen what happens when a team throws out its entire defensive scheme to try to play against something that's not used to. But
hi, Georgia Tech.
Yeah. but obviously you're going to have to make adjustments, and you can't play Lamar Jackson like you play anyone else. He's a very unique talent. So I think it'll be very interesting to see what Brian Ward draws up here. I still expect, like, a much better performance than what we saw on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I was talking to, like, the Louisville guys over at Card Chronicle, and one of the first things they said was, you know, last year's blowout, and, like, everybody talks about last year's blowout and the Heisman moment, you know, for
the game was fairly close into the third quarter.
It was, even into the fourth. Like Louisville scored 20 points in the fourth quarter against a defense that was already depleted down two of its best players. I mean, Cordy was out in the first half, and so was Juwan Dowles. Like, again, it's not to say we didn't lose. It's not to say we didn't get handled, because we did. And Lamar did whatever the hell he wanted in that game. He accounted for over 500 yards, 5 touchdowns. Like, no doubt about it. Like, that was what launched his Heisman campaign into the stratosphere. I'm not doubting any of that. But Syracuse was still able to score points on that team, and that was a much better defense. Syracuse was able to hold them in check for parts of the first three quarters, even if it wasn't, you know, all relative. They still scored 42. But, like, in general, like, that was a game going into the fourth quarter before Louisville just kind of, you know, finished it off, and rightfully so, against an overmatched SU secondary. But let's not pretend that game was some sort of, like, start to finish annihilation. Syracuse was down early, admittedly, but they came back, they fought. That offense really did what it wanted to do for extended stretches. And again, I think that, like, all the NFL caliber talent from last year's defense is pretty much gone, save, like, a guy or two here and there. Louisville's defense is bad. I'd say up until last week, I'd say certifiably bad, and definitely worse than ours, but they actually did manage to have a pretty solid second half against Virginia last week. I still think we have an advantage on that side. And again, I hope that last week's Wake Forest defensive effort is just a one-time blip, and that we can kind of take that and hopefully channel that into something different. I don't want us to change our whole scheme, but I do hope that we are able to, you know, take last week's embarrassment and channel it into something different, something interesting. I know we saw last week It seems like Kingsley Jonathan's kind of out of the equation right now at defensive end. We're incorporating someone like Ryan Guthrie at defensive end. I don't necessarily know if we see that again. I feel like we need as many linebackers as possible. So maybe we look at like something like an adjusted 3-4, or at least like where we look at three down linemen, but then the fourth is like a Ryan Guthrie, a guy who played defensive end for large portions of time last week.
Yeah, I mean, you could see all manner of things. Have we done much of a three-down front this year? I don't remember a ton of it. But
not really. I feel like we've just been so short, although we have been pretty short in the defensive line. And, like, Coleman's not 100%. Again, like, Guthrie's a linebacker. He was brought in, though, for his, like, pass-rushing ability, his ability to get tackles for loss. So it's going to be tough to see how we're able to plug in a lot of our, like, newer additions on the defensive line and how we turn those guys into players who can get containment on a very dynamic quarterback versus players who were just like, you know, sent out there. I mean, Alton Robinson is a great pass rusher and I'm really excited for his future at SU. But seeing him in a position to, instead of being, you know, going after the passer aggressively, but to try to keep him in pocket, I don't necessarily know if our front is really ready to do that.
Yeah. It's going to most likely be a shootout. And I think Syracuse can win it. It's going to be very difficult, but I was just looking, after Syracuse, they're by far the worst defensive performance of the year. I'm looking at Bill C's numbers. We had a 3% percentile for our defense this past game, which is our worst by a large margin.
So we had NC a 0% chance to win that game.
Yep. So our S&P, I don't know what it was last week, but our defensive S&P is down to 84th in the country. Louisville's is 98th. So this is there's going to be a lot of points in this game. And, you know, we have seen Zach Mahoney both, you know, score in the 60s before if he has to play. And Dungy, obviously, I think we're all still pretty high on if he's healthy. So I think there's a shot here, but it's going to probably be just laying enough points on where Lamar Jackson can't make them all up at once.
Yeah, I do think that we just need to avoid something completely like last year's type of game, because if it is like last year's type of game, we're going to lose again. There needs to be some sort of adjustment for us in the second half this week. I hope, to be honest, if we could turn back into a second half team. That would probably require a little bit more of an average performance in the first half, though. It was just jarring, I think, for a lot of fans, too, self-included, to see us completely fall apart in the second half after an entire season full of strong starts.
Yeah, I mean, that's if we could force some turnovers too. Like, it's just been, we just haven't done any
zero
of
on the defensive end since the LSU game.
Yeah, that's why I couldn't remember the last one, and it just hasn't been a thing we've done all year. It's actually kind of remarkable that our defense has held up as well as it has, considering they've done so little of, like, they haven't really made a lot of big plays.
Yeah, they don't make big plays, and that's why the defensive S&P numbers get hit so badly, because there's no really explosiveness, there's no big stops. What we're seeing is just a consistent ability to stop people on third down. Last week, and LSU excluded. The fact that Dungy is probably our leader, or tied for the lead in takeaways, should tell you a lot about our ability to do that to other teams. And we really lucked into that turnover on the punt return last week. Otherwise, we'd go another week without any sort of like special teams or defensive takeaway.
Yeah, and even the pass deflections, like, we're just not making plays on the ball in the secondary very much. We've had improvement in just the actual coverage, but hopefully the next step in this development of our defense, which I think is probably, even considering this week, assuming that was a blip ahead of where we thought it would be, getting takeaways, especially for the way this team is constructed, like, that's a thing that you hope that this defense does. Like, you want to get the ball back to the offense, so it's done a nice job with this, you know, kind of in a makeshift manner where the third down stuff is great. Obviously last game was not so much, but if you can add in like a couple interceptions and some forced fumbles here and there, it's going to make a lot of difference, because you just, especially because we don't always make the most of our red zone trips, just getting more of them and getting more opportunities for points is important, while we still improve on that end on the offense as well. So these are all things that, you know, need to be built on, but overall, like, I'm far from ready to like throw the defense out with the bathwater here.
Same here. Dan, on that cue, why don't we talk a little beer, a little halftime action?
All right, I didn't have too many new things this week, but a couple, well, only one new thing, but a couple ones that I don't usually have. I went over to Beer Authority, which is the new alumni bar in New York City for Syracuse. Obviously, East End Bar and Grill is still a favorite for a lot, and that's a great series bar as well. So should shout them out. But Beer Authority is like the new official place in Midtown West. They have a really nice beer menu, and they have a better beer specialist than what we've had in the past for games. You can get like a Fat Tire for $5, which is pretty good for the city. So I had one of those. I also had a Sophie from Goose Island, which is always a treat. And then they have like a lot of the really high-end Goose Island stuff there. And then elsewhere I had from Distill Brewery in Illinois, I believe, which I don't think I'd had anything from before. Randomly stumbled upon this. I had the Cinco Fatic from their Wild Sour series, which was a really, really nice drinkable sour. So enjoyed all those.
Very nice. For me, it kept it kind of easy after a very busy weekend last weekend. Had Stone's Ventral Spirit IPA, which I grabbed a six-pack of. I haven't like gone out actively to grab like a Stone IPA in a while, and it was pretty good. I don't know if you've seen it around there. It's kind of like a perfect hybrid of like an East Coast and a West Coast IPA.
I don't think I've seen it, but there's plenty of Stone around, so I probably just haven't looked for it.
Yeah, it's pretty tropical. It's pretty interesting. I definitely enjoyed giving it a shot. Also had a Pale to the King from Arrow Lodge. They're from right around here. And that was really it. I kind of kept it pretty light this past weekend, and I probably will again this weekend in preparation for heading to North Carolina for a little beer, turkey, and all kinds of other calories.
Yeah, being at work for almost all these Syracuse football games has really diminished the amount of Syracuse football-related drinking I've had to do. You know, gift and a curse.
Yeah, I mean, I do so much writing and tweeting during the game, and plus they're earlier here, that I try not to imbibe. I think most of my my beverage consumption is either Friday night or much later after the game, once all the recap nonsense is done.
Yep, back at it this weekend. Basketball, luckily, there are a couple more. There's a little more variance, so can do a little bit more with that since they're not all like Saturday afternoons.
Too true. And speaking of basketball, as we mentioned at the top of the show, 2-0. Syracuse looked a little shaky in the first half against Iona, up 32-28 at the half. They didn't shoot the ball super well. By the end of the game, they did. They had 48% from the field. Three-point shootings, hot and cold. Free-throw shootings, hot and cold. I think Iona did a really interesting job doing a little matchup zone and some press, which I would think, for the most part, that Syracuse would be able to understand and break down pretty quickly, since that's what they face in practice. Apparently not. Iona did press for a while. Syracuse was still able to score a few more points in the second half. Come away with a 9-point win. Tyus Battle had 28 points in 35 minutes. I'll confidently say he's headed to the NBA. He's delivered on all the hype this year already. Last year, you know, he started to show glimmers of it. I think this year he is fully on board with being, you know, the guy in this offense. And he's shooting pretty well, too. I mean, he was 11 of 19 in this game against Iona. 2 of 7 from 3, but you know, I don't really care about that when you're going to score 28 points. He's able to be a presence on the boards. We probably need more assists out of this offense, but in general, obviously love Battle's play. Dan, anything stick out to you from the first couple games?
I mean, Battle's been great, and he's going to have to carry this team as far as it'll go this year. He's the only reliable scoring option. So he's at, you know, 23 points a game right now. It wouldn't shock me if he was over 20 points for the year. He might need to be. And he's going to get all the shots he wants. And like you said, he's been pretty efficient. He's, 18 on 14 shots against Cornell, and then he had 28 on 19 shots against Iona, which is awesome. He's shooting over 50% from the field. I think the three-pointers will get, you know, he's only shooting, you know, hitting a third of those, but I think that'll improve because he showed that he could knock those down last year. Some of that's going to be shot selection. Offense, I think, is just not going to be. It's going to be tough all year. There's just really not a definitive second option. I think O'Shea Brissett should improve, and he's, you know, going to be one of the top three or four scorers in this team, no matter what, just by inertia. And I think he'll be really good going forward. But he's probably not what you want as a second option in a major college basketball team as a freshman. I think in like a good Syracuse team, he'd be like that surprising, like CJ Fair as a freshman, where he could get, you know, he'd get 15 points off the bench. And instead he's, you know, a main cog here. If Frank Howard has, and I know he was like, had some up and down moments against Iona, but his final numbers look pretty good. 15 points and 12 shots. Knocked down two of his four threes. If he can continue to be an effective starter, that'd be nice. Overall, like, I think this is, it's just, I'm not going to get too worked up about this team all year. I just think that they have a pretty limited ceiling for this season. But we're getting so many young guys minutes that I think it will pay dividends down the stretch. I mean, you have, what, four freshmen playing. You have Battle, who's only a sophomore, and he's probably gone after this year, like you said, but just enjoying while we have him. It's just a lot of new faces, and I don't know how the season's going to end up. I will say that the early starts of the year for Pitt and Wake Forest make me feel a little better because those two teams look completely lost.
They're abject trash. And
yeah.
Wake is actually the surprising one. Like, Pitt I knew would be garbage, and they're delivering on that then some. Wake, and, you know, I decided to have a little fun at their expense today just to make me feel better about the football game. But neither of them look good. I haven't really gotten to pay any attention to BC, although it seems like they're doing better. Clemson's probably going to struggle a little bit. We're not going to be in the cellar of the ACC in any year. It's, knock on wood, literally impossible for us to do that. But I'm willing to take some closer results like this one against Iona early to get these younger kids some minutes. I mean, we have said the four guys that were in the rotation against Iona. If you count Howard Washington, that's five. Like, we have five freshmen that are getting significant minutes potentially this season. To me, like, I'd say adjust expectations accordingly, but hope that, like you said, the putting them in now pay some big dividends later when everything kind of gels.
Yeah, and it wouldn't surprise me to see Washington. I know he didn't play against Iona, but, like, Geno Thorpe had a very short rope, and we can't just go out there playing two guards. Like, that's just not going to work. So someone is going to need to be the third guard, and obviously Washington wasn't great, and it's Cornell, but, I mean, it's either going to be him or Geno, and I think if neither one's effective, they might as well go with the freshman, who's going to be around for more than a year. So we'll see what that situation is going forward. I'd say I'm, you know, pretty happy with what we've seen so far. I think the defense has been really good. Obviously, these aren't great opponents, but Cornell shot 25% from the field. Iona shot, like, 37%. Neither one has hit too many threes. We're getting to the line, which is nice. We're doing a nice job on the boards, which just could actually end up being one of the better rebounding teams we've had in a while.
Which is weird, because, like, I think everybody was, like, super, like, kind of questioning our, you know, play in the paint and the inexperience and all that. And like, after two games, I'm already pretty sold on this group of you know, centers / power forwards.
Yeah, I mean, Chukwu, I think, obviously, offensively, he's just, like, that's not going to be his game, and he's still developing that. But he had 10 boards in Siona in 22 minutes. I'll take that every night by far, like, easily. I'll take 5 and 10 from him every game. And 3 blocks is great. I mean, he's, you know, you're getting from him what you want. Brissett's a nice two-way player. Moyer has been a very, very good rebounder so far. Sidibe has been not really a nice surprise. I expected, you know, some decent things from him. And Dolezal, considering his size, it seems like this is a good rebounding group. Battle's a big guard. Howard's still a pretty big guard. So I think overall, like, we've struggled on the boards for years now. I think if there's one thing that we'll do well this year, that might be it. And, you know, we'll see what happens when we play, you know, some of the bigger teams in the ACC. But we out-rebounded Iona 42-29. We out-rebounded Cornell 54-36. So, like, these are big margins, and they're very apparent when you watch the games as well. So that's nice, because we're going to need some second-chance points. This team is not going to be a great three-point shooting team. I think they should improve a little bit, but luckily they're not really jacking them like they have been the last couple of years, because that's just not going to be their game, even though at this point you need to hit some. So I think capitalizing on rebounds, especially if they can start to improve on the offensive rebound, on the offensive glass, like, that'll be an important thing for us.
Yeah, I actually think that that Marek might be our key on the offensive rebounding front. Tied up with Chukwu for the most offensive rebounds of 4. High energy dude. I know Boeheim talked about him quite a bit after the game, kind of made a few comparisons to Hakeem Warwick from a, like, weight perspective, which, whatever. But in general, I felt like he was a high motor guy and the type of player that, you know, Boeheim's going to ride with. And again, like, if we can get 3 to 4 solid contributors in the paint, that's probably 2 more than we thought we were getting this year. I'm pretty satisfied with what he's given us so far. It's not, like, amazing numbers, and that's, you know, these, like, huge stat padding numbers or anything like that, but it's what he's done has far exceeded my expectations. And I think, you know, accounting for him as a regular part of the rotation now, like, at least gives me a better feeling looking at the rest of the season and the ACC schedule. Obviously, we don't really face, like, a tough team. We face two straight potential tournament teams the next 2 weeks in Texas, the next two games in Texas Southern and Oakland. But I'd say Oakland is going to be our first, like, big test of, and I know that sounds weird to hear, but Oakland's probably going to be our first big test in terms of what we can do against a tournament-ish, like, they wouldn't be an at-large team, but they're definitely one of the better conference champs that comes out of a one-bid league. What can we do against a team like that who I think they have a little bit of size. They know how to score. That'll be a fun kind of barometer game to watch before we jump into, like, the meat of this non-conference schedule where we have Maryland, KU, and Connecticut back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah, I'm looking at Oakland now. I mean, they've handled Fort Worth and New Orleans pretty easily. They beat Fort Worth 85-71 and New Orleans 87-68. So I think they'll probably contend to win the Horizon. They could easily be a tournament team. If they do that, they obviously will be. And Oakland's always pretty they're always a pretty salty mid-major. Like, that's never a team that's, like, an easy – we've played them at least a few times in recent years.
Yeah, it's been a couple times. I remember, I think, one time, like, while I was there.
Yeah, I think I at least once or twice since I started at SU in 08. So it's definitely not like a gimme, and it's a nice test, and you know, something that'll hopefully look good in the RPI down the road if that's a concern. Kendrick Nunn is their leading scorer. He's 30 points a game.
Jeez.
I think he was at Illinois, right?
That sounds right.
He played 3 years at Illinois. I think he got. I don't want to just throw this out there without it being right. He was kicked off the team in Illinois. I didn't want to just throw that out there. He had a domestic violence issue. He was kicked off the team. He went to Oakland in June. So he was one of the better players on the Illini, I think, when he was there.
At-large contending Illini team, if memory serves.
Yeah, like a decent mid-tier, mid-10 team. He averaged 15 points for them in 2015-16, which was his last time he played.
Yeah.
I think he was might have been the leading scorer that year. If not, he was right up there. So he's averaging 30 points a game for Oakland right now. I don't expect that to continue, but he is a senior guard, a Big Ten caliber senior guard. They have another kid, Martez Walker, who's averaging 22 points a game. I don't know his story. Another senior guard, 6'6". So, yeah, they have some size, especially in the backcourt. He is averaging 22 points. He's hitting 90% of his free throws, 50% of his threes, and 67% from the field. So he is
good.
Yeah, so that's pretty efficient, I'd say. And also getting 5.5 boards a game. Has he always been in Oakland?
I can't say that I've really scouted the Grizzlies too much.
He started at Texas, but he's been in Oakland for 3 years, so he's more or less a Grizzly. So yeah, they have some good players. So that'll be an interesting one before we get into, like, the real heart of the non-conference schedule with Maryland and Kansas and UConn, I guess.
Yeah, so I looked. We've actually faced Oakland twice ever, 08 and 09.
Okay, so yeah, I remember both of those happened. I knew we played them more than once.
Yeah, we blew them out both times, actually, which probably isn't going to be the case this time.
No, I think this will be a tight one.
I actually don't think we're going to blow out anybody this year. Like,
no, this team isn't good enough. Like, the offense isn't good enough. I think the defense could do a really good job of keeping us in games. I just don't see this offense. Like, we're just... If we score over 70 points in a game, I'll take it. If we get tacos, I think that's an accomplishment for this team.
Yeah.
Battle versus Kendrick Nunn. Let's start the hype up for that one. Nice guard battle.
So who can score 30 points first? Please be Tyus.
Please be Tyus. Game close. I mean, we're going to see a lot of points from Tyus battle. I think one of my... Obviously, if this team makes a tournament, again, like, I will be thrilled if this team makes a tournament, even if it's a one-and-done situation. I really want to see Tyus Battle just cook this whole year. I would love to see him make all ACC, at least, like, second team. I just want to see him put up, like, have, like, a redeem Christmas type. If we're going to be bad, let's at least, like, let our one star just do whatever he wants to do next season. Because at least then we have, like, something to root for tangentially.
Yeah, I'd have to agree there. Like, it's the Rakeem Christmas season could have potentially been a tournament season. I think, obviously, with all the NCAA stuff, all that kind of fell apart pretty quickly. And then once that happened, like, you had, you know, the team really wasn't that thrilled about being on the court anymore. I don't blame them for that, but it was nice of Rakim to really put in like a really nice exclamation point to his career. It's one that got him, you know, a shot at the NBA. Looks like that's kind of gone sideways for now for him, but it doesn't mean that he can't, you know, come back and potentially make that dream happen. I know it's it gets tough once you're in your kind of mid-20s, to late 20s, and you haven't made it yet. But, you know, Arinze came out a few years before him and still managed to, you know, make an opening day NBA roster last season at, like, what, 27, 28 years old. So crazier things have happened. I do wish Rakim the best. I feel like he's been one of my, at least for me, one of my favorite players at SU for the past probably decade or so. So nice to see, you know, him get back into the league, hopefully.
Yeah, it won't be quite the same thing with Peace Battle's only been here for, this is his second year, obviously. Right. Christmas is a four-year player, and Christmas, like, was never a huge offensive star until that final year where he had, like, a crazy transformation into an all-conference player. Battle, I think we all had the expectation that he could do this. I mean, he showed it last year at the end of the year, like you said. He was a five-star recruit, and he was, like, a huge player coming in. I mean, Christmas was as well, but for different, more for his potential. Battle was a really established star already when he got to SU. But either way, I mean, he's one of our own. So I think if Tyus wants to go out here and try to average 25 points a game, I am all here for it.
Do it. All right. A little bit more basketball, then we'll just make some Louisville picks. One other thing I decided, I mentioned this earlier, decided to post today was about Iona losing its fifth straight out of five tries game to Syracuse, joining the unceremonious five-timers club for Syracuse basketball opponents. There are nine teams in this club, and again, Iona is the newest. Five of them have lost five games, one of them have lost six games, and three teams, Albany, Lafayette, and Siena, have all lost eight games in eight tries to Syracuse. Siena notably lost to Lemoyne today, or yesterday, one of those two. And that sucks for them because that game actually counts. It's not like us where, you know, once in a blue moon we lose to Lemoyne in the preseason. So unfortunate for the Saints. But Dan, I don't know if you have any thoughts. My favorite part of that fact is the fact that Wake Forest is still on that list several years into the ACC.
I'm surprised we haven't played Iona more.
Of all the schools in New York.
Yeah. I'm surprised we haven't played Albany more. I'm surprised Siena never picked us off when they had some really good teams in the mid-2000s.
I feel like we avoided them those years.
We might have, and that wouldn't have been the worst thing to do. BYU, I'm kind of surprised we played BYU five times.
I mean, there's the Church of Latter-day Saints. Well, the Church of Latter-day Saints has like enough of a tie with upstate area where like there is a natural fit that should probably be there a little bit more with all of our athletic programs.
I guess we never played the Jimmer teams, though.
We never played the Jimmer teams. We actually haven't played, this was probably smart in some ways, we haven't played Siena since 2007.
Okay, so that was right around when they were making, like, didn't they beat Louisville one year in the tournament?
Yeah,
they were that.
We only beat them by eight in 2007, but like 2007, 08, no, sorry, yeah, 07, 08 was in general just like a weird year, so I can't really fault them too much for only beating them by eight.
Yeah, so BYU, we haven't scheduled. I'm assuming it was in December, so it had to be. So we haven't scheduled them since 68. We played them in the tournament in the famous GMAC, like, 43-point explosion game in 04. But that was the only time we've played them since 1968. And then, again, like, I'm kind of surprised we haven't played, like, Albany a couple more times. Kent State's a random one to have played five times.
Yeah, like, it's weird with, like, the SUNY schools. I feel like we just don't, other than Buffalo, we just haven't really put in much of an effort. Because, like, they're all more difficult to get to, I guess?
I don't know. I guess, like, Eastern, like the capital region's not, like, right there.
There's only, like, a handful of them. I mean, like, even Bing, we didn't even start playing them until, like, a few years. Like, I think our first game against them was, like, 01, which is, like, really surprising to me.
Yeah. They also had, like, weird Standal and some other stuff.
That's true. Yeah, Kent State. None of these games were,
There was one in 05, but it's looked.
Not one of these games was an NCAA tournament game.
That's interesting, too, that it wouldn't have been an opening round game. Like, that's just a random opponent to have played without, like, a connection. And maybe there was one, I just don't remember it.
Not that I'm aware of. But, yeah, like, Northeastern makes a little more sense. Like, even Lafayette makes sense. Because most of those games were, I think, pre, like, 1950.
Yeah, I mean, those make more sense as those were, like, you know, private schools in the Northeast.
Right.
And there was, like, less of a breakdown between, like, divisions and conferences and whatnot. I mean, there weren't conferences. I think they're basketball conferences, but they weren't the same, like, as what they are now. So those make a little more sense.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, the most fun part of this all to me is the fact that Wake Forest is 0-5. And knock on wood, could be 0-7 at the end of this year.
Looking pretty good right now.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not like we've lit the world on fire, but Wake looks bad.
I mean, they lost to Liberty and Georgia Southern, noted powers in whatever garbage conference they're in. I want to say Sun Belt and Atlantic Sun? I don't know what conference Liberty's in. I know what conference Georgia Southern's in.
No, Liberty shouldn't be in a conference, so it's irrelevant.
Yeah, Liberty shouldn't exist, actually.
Yeah, right.
they are Flames. They should probably be in Flames.
Except for the fact that they're going to pay us like $1 million to go down there and hopefully beat them in a couple years. So
sure, whatever.
They can exist for that day.
Yeah, just for that day. I'm not thrilled about it, but yeah.
As we've discussed, at least we didn't paid.
That's true. For those who didn't read the article, I included some fake Danny Manning quotes. He's very much looking forward to being the PR chair of the Five Timers Club, as ceremoniously awarded to the fourth place team in the Five Timers Club. And if Wake Forest manages to lose three more to us in a row, they will officially take the presidency of the 0-5 group here. It's quite an accomplishment for the Deacs.
Something to shoot for, and you can do it. I don't know. I assume we won't play them twice next year, but
No. You
can at least tie up Albany in 2019.
And knowing Jim Boeheim, he knows about this club, and he'll face the Danes. Just to
keep New York ahead.
Just keep New York. Although, you know what, to be honest, I feel like Jim Boeheim does know about this club, and that's why he hasn't scheduled any of the like 0-8 or worse clubs in the last like decade.
Jim Boeheim probably is aware of what teams have not beat him. Like, that's just a thing that Jim Boeheim would know.
Yeah.
He's very petty.
I addressed this in the article last week, where I was like, I feel like I have a kinship personally with Jim Boeheim because of the fact that, like, it's not that I'm petty or like have this like vendetta or grudge against people. It's that I just have a photographic memory and therefore just like remember slights just more vividly. And I feel like Jim's the same way, where he just has this. He remembers everything, but he especially remembers those things. And I relate to him on that level.
And of course, for Wake Forest and the rest, it's important to have goals. So, Wake, you're very close to achieving something special.
So close. All right. Before we wrap up here, Dan, we talked a little bit about Syracuse, Louisville. We talked a little bit about our ability or lack thereof to stop Lamar Jackson. Do you think Syracuse can win this game? And I'll caveat it with: do you have different answers if Dungy can go versus if Mahoney goes again?
Ooh, it's tough. I mean, if we get like first half against Wake Mahoney / offense, like obviously that would be great. I still think Dungy gives us the best chance to win, especially considering like Louisville's defense is very sloppy.
Yeah.
And I could see Dungy having a huge, like, I could see Dungy being the guy who can take advantage of that with his legs and with his athleticism. I kind of assume Mahoney will play based on the Steve Ishmael, like, probably said too much. Moment of the
definitely
week.
Definitely said too much. I thought about writing about it. It just felt like it'd be a real dick move.
Yeah. I mean, part of that could be like players just give like quotes that they like, I'm not saying this is what happened. I don't know. I wasn't there. Sometimes players will say something and it'll come off like a different way than what they intended, or they'll phrase things ways that aren't necessarily accurate, or he's playing like chess, three-dimensional chess right now, and is trying to make it seem like Dungy's definitely not playing when he might. Obviously, Baber said that he hopes that Dungy can go and he's getting better from whatever this foot injury is, or this lower body injury is. Mm. I think it's an ankle, right? We know this.
Definitely an ankle. Somebody randomly commented and then like, you know, ran away in the comments that it was like broken bone in his foot, whatever. Since we haven't really heard any sort of confirmation, I'm assuming it's the ankle based on the injuries we saw him suffer through in the Miami and the Florida State games, and what just kind of the hits we saw him take there. I do think, for those who haven't seen, Steve Ishmael kind of like mentioned that, you know, they were hoping Eric was pulling for them and they were really hoping to get a bowl game for him. That seemed to indicate that he's out for the rest of the regular season, which, you know, it just cues up my usual question of why can't we have nice things? Because Eric Dungy has yet to finish a full season for us in 3 years, despite a record-setting performance.
At least this is for fun, new reasons, and not
not the old reasons.
Unspecified upper body injuries.
The new adventures of old injuries. It's
It's fortunate. I do think that Mahoney can compete. I think Mahoney's like kind of destined to win one of these big games, considering he's been so close so many times and in such big opponents. And obviously, Louisville doesn't quite fit the same bill as like LSU or Clemson the one time or. Wake is better than Louisville this year.
NC State those other two times.
NC State those two times. Like, Mahoney should get one of these wins. He's come so close.
Let's make this one the win.
I'm fine with that. Like, and again, like, obviously I want to see Dungy play, but I don't want to risk Dungy's health, especially because he is the quarterback of next year. And I don't know the drop-off is that crazy where we can't go in there and win with Mahoney. I'm going to predict that Louisville will win. I think we'll be back to more of a normal type deal. I think Syracuse will cover. I'm going to go Louisville 30. Let's go Louisville 38-34.
All right. Yeah, I'm thinking Mahoney starts. I'm thinking that we look a lot more like we did in the first half on both ends than we did in the second half on both ends afterward. You know, and Wake Forest obviously came back by a lot, outscored us by 35 points in the second half, which makes me want to cry. I think Lamar still does whatever the hell he wants. Give me 45-40.
All right, so we both have, you know, pretty close single-digit games.
Yeah. It's going to be stupid.
As I said before, it's a single-digit spread. Bill C's numbers, I closed out the tab, but I looked. He has it as a, like, between an 8 and 9 point margin, so he likes Syracuse to cover. I mean, not him. His numbers like Syracuse to cover. He'll yell at us if he was here. And Syracuse continues. I think they're like 6-3-1 against the spread now. This is Wake Forest
6-2-1. We didn't get a spread for Central Connecticut.
Right. Okay. 6-2-1 against the spread this year. So, this is a team that's done better than what Vegas expects most of the time this year, and I think 13.5 points against a Louisville team that cannot defend and is not particularly good is way too many. So, I think this will be a close game. I think this will be a high-scoring game. And hopefully Syracuse can just make things happen and keep the bowl dream alive.
Yeah, please prove us wrong, Syracuse, because, you know, Anthony Brown's not playing anymore for BC. So that immediately opens that game up even more than it already was. So I would love... to get a chance to play for 6-6 in week 12. That would be most appreciated by myself, Dan, and I'm pretty sure every other Syracuse fan.
Yep, I mostly just don't want to win 4 games and have to deal with, like, the onslaught of, oh, nothing's any better, even though if you watch, like, a second of the games, like, it's obviously better.
It's my favorite.
Let's just avoid that.
It's my favorite weekly and off-seasonly pastime.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, Dan, thank you as always for joining. Much appreciated.
Yes, look forward to talking to you next week after a win. Let's see.
Let's see. We'll have to see when we're talking next week. We'll take that conversation offline due to the Thanksgiving holiday and all that. But it's definitely gonna throw a couple wrenches into things. But we'll figure something out. That was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's and Absolute Podcast. You can rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, and go Orange.
Go Orange.